Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. As promised, Jason Everett with us this hour. Jason, of course, from chastity.com and from years and years of teaching folks both the importance and the beauty of chastity and the practical steps that it takes to embrace this very basic call of our humanity to live as chaste people. If you've got questions about chastity, maybe you've got questions about raising chaste children, maybe you've got questions about your own chastity, chastity in the family, the later years, whatever it is, dealing with pornography. Many people are dealing with pornography. If you've got questions, 888-318-7884. Another thing that Jason's been writing about and speaking about, however, is also the transgender things that are going on, the various transgender ideas that are out there, how to confront those ideas and how to help those who may be under their influence. 888-318-7884 is the number. As I said, Jason, of course, is the proprietor of chastity.com. You know him. Jason, welcome.
It's good to be back with you, Si.
Well, thanks for being here. I'm a little concerned for your health.
Yeah. Why is that?
Because of what you were telling me just before I went on the air, that you're going to go down to Australia, mm-hmm. and you're going to do 11 talks in 2.5 days, and then you're coming home. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, the host down there, Charbel, who's like my slave driver, I mean my host for the event, he's doing great work. He's got an apostolate called Perusia Media, and it's just like, it's like kind of like Catholic Answers or
for Australia.
You know, just an evangelization, you know, outreach throughout the whole continent. I mean, he's doing some awesome stuff down there. So we're doing a purpose conference with myself and Matt Fradd and a bishop down there. So very much looking forward to going back.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. I'm glad you are, and I hope you get a wonderful turnout. So people should just go to the Perusia Media website, I would assume, if they want to know where they can see you and Matt.
I think so. It's just called the Purpose Conference. I'm sure if they Googled Purpose Conference Sydney Catholic, you know, it's through the diocese there. They'll be able to find out all about it.
Hydrate.
Yeah.
Jason, hydrate. That's the key. At least that's what my wife always tells me.
Yeah.
888-318-7884 is the number. If you want to talk about chastity or gender issues with Jason Everett, you are very welcome to pick up the phone and call 888-318-7884. Would you tell me just a little bit before I go to the calls about what you have been writing? I know you have a book on the gender issues and what kind of things you're hearing as you're out there in the world, because you spend a lot of time out there face to face with folks.
Yeah, that's the newest one we came out with. It's called Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. And one of the main premises in the book is that we need to listen to gender dysphoria with reverent curiosity. And the idea behind that is instead of having a posture of just, okay, this is just some infernal ideology we just need to debate or debunk or disprove, gender dysphoria is a real thing that people wrestle with. And if you've got people that struggle with that, and all you want to do is debate them over chromosomes, you know, there's a time and place for that, but they'll feel like, okay, there's really no room for me in the church to navigate these struggles that I'm having and how I feel like this new gender identity label resonates so much with my lived experience. And I found this community of people who support me, and all you Catholics want to do is debate me. There's no room for me in the church. And then we've got
them.
So there's stories. I met a woman recently driving around. She said her sister is having top surgery, which is a double mastectomy, wants to identify as male. And I was just talking to her about the roots of all this stuff. And she said, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, she said, our father left us when we were kids. And her sister said, I want to be a better dad than my dad was. And so she's transitioning to male. And so what I hear there is like some really deep core aches. And so listen to where this is coming from to kind of tap into the healing that needs to happen. Instead of just arguing over them over chromosomes, we have to use the ears of Christ and not just his mouth.
Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful message. 888-318-7884 is the number if you'd like to talk with Jason about how to do just that, how to listen what did you call it? Respectful?
Just listening to gender dysphoria with kind of reverent curiosity.
Reverent curiosity,
Yeah,
because this is, it's not a science project we're doing here. This is people's lives. And
go ahead.
It just has layers of depth and complexity that requires a listening heart, someone willing to just listen.
Yeah, and that's easier said than done, like especially if you're a family member. I met a mother recently whose middle-aged son is now transitioning, and she's told him, I can't even look at him with his makeup and his nail polish and his hair. And she said, I've told him, if you come to my house, don't even wear this stuff because I won't even look at you. And I challenged her on it. I said, Our Lady, when they took our Lord's body off the cross and they put it into her arms, she did not even want to look at her son that she couldn't even recognize, but she didn't take her glance off of him. And I said, that look pierced her heart. But I said, I really think that your son needs your look of love now more than he's ever needed it in his life before. And a look of love is not an affirmation of their choices. It's an affirmation of their value. Mm-hmm. So don't turn your gaze away from him, even though Our Lady wouldn't want to gaze at the, you know, unrecognizable body of her son. The mother just started weeping, and she realized she needs to look at him. She needs to see him in this place and love him through this.
888-318-7884-888-31-TRUTH if you'd like to talk with Jason Everett today. And but what you said raises a question for me that I would like to ask before I go to the callers, and I appreciate the callers' patience while I do that. But you said the people, they don't feel welcome in the church. Like a person who has this dysphoria or maybe has had surgery or whatever, that person doesn't feel welcome in the church. So what's the answer to that?
Well, to engage with them and let them know that they're seen, that God, in fact, is the only one who sees them. He's the only one who really knows the suffering that they've been through. And we have to enter into their lives. Like Pope Francis talks about smelling like the sheep. I had just dinner a couple nights ago with a gentleman I've been corresponding with via email for a long time. Catholic guy, does not want surgery, doesn't want hormones, but still wants to present as female, change the name and do all that stuff. And he and I've been talking a long time. I said, hey, I'm coming to town for some seminars. You want to meet up and do dinner? And he said, yeah, I'd love to. And so he drove like an hour and a half so we could just sit down. And, I bought him dinner and he talked probably 95% of the conversation. And I just kind of listened. I didn't go in there with an agenda like, okay, I want to make sure by the end of this conversation, my anthropology, it's like, okay, this is going to be more of a marathon than a sprint. And so I just need to be, I don't need to have a perfect answer for everything because they're not looking for someone with all the answers. They're looking for someone that can realize and appreciate them as a mystery to be received and not some problem just to be solved. And so I think we've got to be willing to engage. I know some people are like, I'm not even going to sit with someone of these trainees who comes into my church. I'm like, yeah, well, where would Jesus have sat? Right next to him. That's the pew he would have picked, And so we've got to realize that, these are not lepers that we should see as on the other side of the street. I'm not going to cross on that side if that's where they're at. No, we need to make a beeline to them and realize, like, hey, I got my own issues and what it means to be a man that I need to sort through with God. And they do as well, maybe in a different way. But I'm not like, okay, I'm up here because I don't wrestle with gender dysphoria. You're down there because you do. We're just going to reek of arrogance. And why would they want to come to the church in the first place?
Amen. Amen. Jason Everett, 888-318-7884, the number to call. All right. Thank you, callers, for letting me take the moment to ask Jason that. Catherine's in Missouri listening on Covenant Radio. Catherine, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Hi. Hi. Thank you. I have one of many children. And when he was in third grade, he had an older teacher who barely knew how to open a browser. And she would often just let the children carte blanche have time to research or play math games online. And she did not know how to utilize the monitoring software. So it never got utilized. And unbeknownst to me, my child started a daily pornography habit because all the kids had laptops. He would hold it in his lap, lean his body over it, and had earbuds. No one knew what he was watching. It was an everyday thing. As far as I know of, because his brother made an announcement that I thought he must be lying. He made an announcement that, Big Brother looks at naked girls on the internet. And that is the only time that I know of that happened in my home. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it was every day at school. And I can go back on his profile for his Chromebook where he started looking at YouTube videos that were things like, my girlfriend in a bikini or something like that. So that third grade to fifth grade, we started therapy for him when he was in sixth grade because he was when he'd get in trouble, I'd notice he was pinching himself, squeezing. He started basically self-harming. He wasn't cutting, but he was certainly doing things because he would rather feel pain than shame.
Yeah.
Now he is a freshman.
Okay.
Okay.
He has a Chromebook now, and we said, mm-hmm. hey, school is watching. If you go anywhere, if you go to inappropriate websites, school will know. And I got a call about a month ago, and he was in the principal's office because over the weekend he got his Chromebook out and stayed up basically all night and was surfing porn websites and going to, trying to set up accounts with different social media, TikTok, yeah. things like that.
So, Catherine, you'd like Jason to help you with how can you help your son now that he's this far into this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jason?
Yeah. I know it changes your brain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, some of the stuff I'd recommend. I mean, first, obviously, we can't leave it up at the schools because obviously they seem to have inadequate filtering programs and whatever it is the heck that they're using there. A couple ones I would recommend. I mean, Covenant Eyes is good. It doesn't block everything necessarily, but it shows you a report of everything that's being viewed on that. So if you go to covenanteyes.com, you can learn how to install that stuff on any device, whether it's a phone, MacBook, PC, tablet, whatever. So I'd say get Covenant Eyes on there so there's some accountability reporting going on. There's another one called Canopy, canopy.us. And what they'll do is it'll just basically block out any immodest imagery and just turn it into a little white block of what had been there on that website. Because the easy part typically is blocking pornographic websites. You can have filters for that. The hard part is blocking out immodest content on websites that aren't necessarily pornographic. And so with the Canopy software, you can block out all that imagery. It'll scan the website within milliseconds and block out any of that potential issues in terms of the imagery. So that's helpful. One other thing I'd recommend is the Gryphon router, Gryphon. This is a big overlooked aspect of internet security because kids are tech savvy. And if they have a phone, you know, we'll all use Wi-Fi over at my friend's house instead of, you know, being the Wi-Fi at our house where you can see what I'm looking at. The Gryphon router will actually send, if you add their little app called Homebound to it, will send back to your router at home all the stuff that they're looking at away from home. So you can have a list of all the websites that they've been looking at. And so whether it's router, Canopy, the Gryphon router, Covenant Eyes, you can get all those in terms of the links to those at chastity.com/parents. So chastity.com/parents, P-A-R-E-N-T-S, is where we house some of those links that you can just click on. But then also just in terms of, those are just, boundaries. They're just guardrails. It's not really teaching a person how to drive if every time they try to just run the car off the cliff, they get bounced back. How do we retrain his desires and heal the stuff? Continued counseling, obviously super important. You obviously want to share with the school some of these resources I'm sharing with you so they can protect the other kids as well. And then we also have a program we created called Forged. And it's something we recommend that boys do with their dads. It's a 33-day kind of game plan where every day there's a different kind of spiritual exercise, reflection, and a free video that we email to you for the program. So day one is me. Day two is maybe Matt Frad. Then we got Father Mike Schmitz and Father Jacques Philippe and Sister Miriam James. And so marriage counselors. So it's not just from a theological perspective. We're addressing it from spiritual, from emotional, from psychological perspectives, physiological, because if we're just praying it away, that's super important. But what about the psychological component here? What about what is he searching out online? And what does that tell us about his feelings of shame and inadequacy? Or what is, a lot of times a person's internet searches say something about some craving that isn't being met in their life. But I mean, as a third grader, how do you even, because I mean, that's when I started finding the stuff in my neighborhood, like magazines in the street, and brought it home. Then my friend had it. You don't even know how to process anything but your fascination. It's like, okay, I know I'm fascinated and this is bad, but I am so drawn to something shameful. That must mean I am shameful. And so we kind of go back to these patterns of shame and isolation. So with a good spiritual director, a good counselor that understands this stuff, if you're looking for one, there's a guy named Dr. Peter Kleponis, who's very good, K-L-E-P-O-N-I-S. He does a lot of virtual online counseling in particular for guys struggling with pornographic addiction, on how they can break free. And so you don't need to meet them in person, you can do it online. So between Dr. Peter Kalponis, the Forged program, which is chastity.com, and those different filtering things, you know, that'll give you an, but just try also, I just say lastly, that when your husband hopefully can talk to him about this stuff, that it's not so much, hey, you know, we're ashamed of you, we're mad at you, there you go, did it again. Just, you know, say, hey, buddy, look, I get it. I'm a guy. Temptation's a part of life. And a lot of times when we fall into this stuff, we're bored, we're lonely, we're angry, we're stressed out, we're tired. We're in that time of desolation. We seek consolation. Let me show you as a man how to find real consolation in life instead of these false consolations of porn. So if your husband can kind of take him by the hand, walk him through the Forge program, we can teach him as a young guy how to process these moments of desolation so he doesn't end up being a 28-year-old guy who still has third grade coping mechanisms for life's difficulties. So I know I threw a whole spit wad full of stuff at you, but hopefully some of that stuff will be useful in helping your son. We just ask all the listeners too, to maybe please pray as the show goes on for your son and just for all families wrestling with this, because you're not alone.
Catherine, we are a little bit late for the break, so I have to take the break. Thank you for the call. The number is 888-318-7884. If you have questions about chastity, you would like to know what the church teaches, but if you'd like to know any of the practical stuff too, like that you just heard a good deal of the practical stuff from Jason. You want to talk about the gender issues that have been raised everywhere in our society, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
You know, we talk story with each of our very unique guests for the whole hour so that you can go deep with us as you yourself pursue your own story of heroic virtue and as you pursue intimacy with God.
The Bear Wozniak Adventure, Saturday night, 6 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking chastity with Jason Evert. You can find out all about what Jason does, where he's going to be speaking, the many books, publications, resources that are available to you through Jason's work. You can find it all at chastity.com. Just go to chastity.com. One thing you will also find there is Jason's going on pilgrimage to Italy, to Orvieto, Assisi, Siena, Rome. Holy smokes, that's a good lineup. And it's 9 days, and it's this January. It's next month, January 13th through 21st. So if you want to go, you can just click the pilgrimage button over at chastity.com. Have you done this before? This is, looks like a magnificent itinerary.
This is our first one ever to Italy, but the tour company has done it so many times. They've really polished it up and found some amazing things to do. So Father Agostino Torres, who's a CFR priest, is just amazing. He's going to come. He's going to bring four of his Franciscan friars with him.
Wow.
So they're going to do a CC together. And then I even asked one of John Paul II's Swiss guards. I'm like, hey, got any dining recommendations? And he's like, oh, I know this one place. You got to go to this fountain down the alley. It's this real small place. But he said, man, there's no menu. It's just this grandma and whatever she cooks that night, you eat. And he said, if you want to know what the angels eat in heaven, that's it. And so like these little nooks and little things, we're going to kind of explore through Rome together. So yeah, so it's coming up pretty fast, month and a half, but there's still some spots open. So if anyone wants to go, chastity.com, you'll see the pop-up ad there. Just ask someone to put it in your stocking for Christmas, you know, just a little
sure.
trip to Italy and bring your kids or grandkids, spouse, whatever.
How wonderful. And will you be doing talks?
I mean, I'll be doing different little reflections, same as Father Agostino. I mean, his specialty is really, you know, Franciscan spirituality. Mine is more St. John Paul II. And so it's going to kind of be a perfect blend of all these things, because we're going to have some good bus rides and we get on the mic and do the little
right.
talks.
Right.
Lots of playing, lots of praying, lots of pasta. So it's going to be a good trip.
And visit Francis and Claire in Assisi. Yeah. That's worth the trip, right?
Carlo Acutis is out there now, too. So,
is he really? Jason, I didn't know that. I was just there in Assisi, and I didn't know that.
Yeah, I guess he's nearby, apparently. So that's what we're going to go see his tomb also.
Oh, wonderful. 888-318-7884 is the number here. 888-318-7884. Sometimes you just look around at our society and you go, we've lost this battle, Jason. We've lost this chastity battle. And I think parents struggle with kids over modesty, not because kids are bad kids, but because every model that they have says, mom and dad are being prudes about this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is easy to look at culture and be like, hey, everything's going to hell in a handbasket. But what's interesting, Centers for Disease Control releases their statistics every 2 years on teen sexual activity. And what they found is the rates of sexual activity among American high school students in the last 30 years have been constantly going down. And last year is the lowest they've ever recorded so far. 20% of American high school students are currently sexually active. 30% have ever had sex, meaning most high school students in the country are virgins. But we've got to be tempered in our enthusiasm about those results, because an increase in abstinence is not necessarily an increase in virtue. And so just because fewer people are sexually active, you know, well, is it a good thing that now they're just on their phones, you know, watching other people be sexually active, or they're, you know, calling themselves asexual because they've seen what's on the internet and they know they don't want that. Right. So my identity is asexual. So we've got a different host of problems. But, you know, as you mentioned, modesty, I think if we're going to sell this, you know, in particular to the girls, there's a couple things we've got to do. I think first, we've got to realize why they're so resentful towards the message of chastity as females. And I think for good reasons. I think the first one is because they've never heard anyone talk about male modesty. It's not even on the radar. It's because we made the mistake of reducing modesty to clothing. And if modesty is just my outfit, then, well, I've got pants on, like, hey, we're modest today. It's like, okay, well, is there more to it than clothing? And yeah, because the immodesty, I think, of a man's intentions could be far more immodest than any outfit she's got in her closet. The immodesty of the way he dances, the way he talks about women or about women. Modesty is a virtue for the guys as well. You know, another reason I think women are resented is for thousands of years, the whole problem of lust has been blamed on the body of the woman. You know, you're the adulteress, you're the occasion of sin, you were wearing that outfit. But what we've got to remember is, like, the cause of robbery is not the presence of jewelry in the window of the store. The cause of robbery is the presence of greed in the heart of the robber. So greed causes robbery, and what causes lust is the human heart. And it doesn't mean women should just dress however the heck they want, but we got to remember the body isn't the invention of the devil. The body isn't the problem. The problem is, like, maybe I need some redemption in the way that I look at a woman's body. I had a guy on the podcast a couple of weeks ago named Bishop Eric Varden from Norway. This guy was awesome. He's a monk and a bishop from Norway. And he said when he was a young priest, an elderly priest came back to the rectory just beaming, smiling, and he just looked delighted. And Bishop said, oh, you look like you're having a good day. And the older priest said, I just saw in the street the most beautiful woman you could imagine. And he said, I just wanted to applaud. And then he just walked on. But that was it. Like, he didn't applaud. That would make things awkward. Nor did he stare at her and, like, oh, why can't I have that? He just saw and rejoiced and moved on with his day. Like, he had such purity of heart. He could pass through that sign of the eternal beauty we all ache for, appreciate it, be thankful to God, and move on with his life. You know, that's the freedom that comes, I think, with a pure heart. And so when we talk about modesty, we've got to make sure we're helping the girls to understand this isn't just a girl problem. In fact, modesty opens the way towards love. That the whole function of modesty is just to sufficiently conceal, not completely make invisible, sufficiently conceal the sexual values of the person so they don't eclipse your personal value. Because your sexual value is there and it is good. But if we place the sexual value above your personal value, you have lust. When we have the personal value in this hierarchy of values above your sexual value, then it opens a way towards love. Because you're being valued for who you are, not just the body parts you have. Because what you win a man with, I tell the girls, is what you keep him with. I mean, if you win him with pleasure, then you have to keep him with pleasure. But he can get it anywhere, off the internet, off another girl. It's a repeatable thing. If you win him with your body, then you have to keep them with your body. But here's the problem. Like, every woman has a body. I can't even remember the last woman I met who did not have a body. Like, it's a repeatable thing.
You can't remember.
It's been forever, you know. but if you went with who you are as a person, the relationship's more likely to go the distance. And so if we can kind of pitch modesty to them in this way, not that your body's bad and dirty, but you deserve love. And this opens the way to authentic love. I think you find the defenses come down a little bit. Okay, he's not shaming me. He's not wagging a finger. He's calling the guys into this as well. Okay, maybe I'll listen to what they have to say on this topic. But yeah, it's a battle, but it's a battle worth fighting. So stick your nose out. If your kid's wearing something they shouldn't be, call them out on it. And, you know, I'm like kind of like a conflict avoidant type of person. Like, I don't like, you know, getting in big disagreements, but we got to be willing to go there and talk about this tough stuff.
888-318-7884. We're talking chastity with Jason Everett. You are welcome to call. 888-318-7884. Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry. And it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history in the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
As we enter the holidays, we are talking about Old Saint Nick.
That's tomorrow's topic on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, talking with Jason Everett. And we're talking about chastity, and you are welcome to call with your questions. Maybe it's a personal question about persevering in chastity or undertaking the task of chastity in your life or in your married life, or maybe it has to do with the children. Maybe it has to do with something else. If you've got questions about chastity, about the Catholic teaching on chastity, by the way, Jason will talk to anybody. I believe this is one of the features of Jason's life as in ministry is he'll talk to anybody. So you don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. If you have questions in this regard, 888-318-7884. As a matter of fact, Jason, I noticed that there are more secular kind of like anti-pornography or pro kind of I don't know if it's gotten quite to the point of chastity as a virtue, but but there's a lot of appreciation for the fact that things are out of whack, even among secular people, I notice.
Yeah, no, it's becoming increasingly painfully obvious the effects of it on relationships, physiology, neurology, marriages, right. children. It's called to me like tobacco, you know, back in the, I don't know, 40s, 50s, 60s, like, hey, this is the coolest thing ever. I mean, I grew up, not to date myself, but I remember being on like Southwest Airlines when like, oh, great, the person behind me is lighting up with a cigarette and you got to smell it during the flight. You know, when there were ashtrays in cars and that's just the way it was.
That was like, the time I was sitting behind you on Southwest Airlines.
I was probably side lighting up a Marlboro.
I was.
But, you know, but then the data came out and it's like, whoa, it does what to your lungs and what to your body, like your heart, and you're dying and your esophagus is falling apart. Like, oh, well, maybe that's not so cool. I think we've kind of, we're starting to get into that phase in terms of the long-term damage that pornography and even short-term damage that's being caused to civilization as a whole, where you realize, okay, I don't have to be an overly religious person to see it's just toxic to marriage and what it's doing to these children and their expectations of human sexuality, what it's doing to the poor women who are essentially prostituting themselves online.
Right.
We figured out how to do that on COVID and be like, well, hey, I don't have to have a 9-to-5 job. I can just sell myself in this way. And what a deal. And it's just like, you just, your heart breaks for these women. Like, you wish you could tell them, look, you're getting ripped off. Like, I don't care if you're getting $25,000 a month on selling yourself. Like, it should cost a guy one of these, like a wedding ring to see your body, you know, not a $10 a month subscription or whatever you're charging these guys. And so, yeah, it's becoming increasingly painfully obvious that this thing promises that it's harmless and adult and consensual, but harmless, I mean, nothing could be further from the truth other than perhaps calling a strip club a gentleman's club. Yeah, you don't really, gentlemen typically don't need a pink neon sign to declare that they are one.
Yeah, that is true. You rarely run into the top hatted gentleman set approaching the pink flamingo on the outside. 888-318-7884 is the number. However, you know, we have this sex positivity movement, and I know you've got to know about this.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I find a lot of the sex positivity movement and writings, because I try to read it, I want to know what they're saying. I find it accusatory. It's a movement that is saying, you're implying that if you don't, if you're not a libertine, you're somehow a negative, anti-human person.
Yeah, just as puritanical, repressive, judgmental, uptight, neurotic, frigid prude that thinks that sex is just the worst thing ever. When in reality, what's interesting, they did a big study of college students and the hookup culture. And a couple things they found. One is that college students vastly overestimate the sexual activity of their own peers, thinking that just everybody's going to bed with everybody, when in reality, it wasn't even remotely true. But then they asked, if you have a traditional romantic relationship or a hookup, college guys and girls, much said, I would far prefer to have a traditional romantic relationship, but they were twice as likely to hook up as they were to even go on a first date. And they asked them, well, how do you feel after hookup? 5% said they felt proud. 2% said they felt wanted. To me, that doesn't seem like a very sex-positive approach to life. It's kind of promising you everything and then delivering nothing.
888-318-7884, the number. But even among the secular folks who are, you know, there's quite a bit of kind of online material about overcoming an addiction to pornography and all that comes with pornography. Mm-hmm. But I think we get a lot of calls, Jason, and maybe you see this as well, of a kind of hopelessness of, this is not something that I can overcome or that I'm going to be able to overcome. And I know what to say basically of, first of all, this is not hopeless, but I'm not much help beyond the affirmation of, you're wrong, this is not hopeless. So help us out with the person who feels it's just hopeless for me now.
Yeah, I mean, sheer willpower in and of itself cannot create a pure heart. It could give you seasons of abstinence, of restraint from that behavior. Well, I'm doing this and I'm taking my cold showers and I've got my accountability partner. I've got my filters. I've got this. I've got that. I've got all these external things. But ultimately, purity is not about getting stronger and stronger. To me, true purity of heart is realizing how weak we truly are, and then coming to God in our vulnerability for Him with His grace to be able to sustain us through this difficult and perilous journey. And so it's not so much I made it, I did it, as like, I am incapable of doing this. God, please step in. I need your help. And so often it kind of drives us to our knees. And that's where the devil wants to kind of pour in a lot of desolation and despair of just like, wow, look, there you go again. You did it again. You think God loves you. You think he could use you. And that's, I remember one priest saying, yeah, look, God knows your sins, but he calls you by your name. The devil knows your name, but he calls you by your sins. And so he wants you to really rub your nose in this thing. And when you're trying to break free, it's almost like two magnets you're trying to pull apart. At first, it's very difficult. Like, wow. And you think, is it always going to be this hard for the rest of my life?
Right.
If so, throw in the towel now, without realizing that the further you get those magnets apart, it's like, okay, well, this is doable. This isn't the end of the world. I mean, saying no to pornography to me when I was 17 would be like, man, do you think I can make a week without it? I don't know. It's really hard. But then now it's like, okay, yeah, that's doable, you know, because I've purged the stuff in my life. And I know I can't go close to that stuff because I know there's nothing good there waiting for me. And so we just got to make sure that you're not losing your peace when you fall down, but just realize, okay, yeah, you messed up. Okay, get up now. There used to be a Dwayne Wade sneaker commercial, I think, for Nike, where it said, fall down 7 times, get up 8. And that's the Christian life. The one who wins their crown in the end is the one who just got up one more time when they fell down.
888-318-7884, the number. I never liked that commercial because the math is too hard for me.
Actually wrong, because if you fall down 7 times, you only have to get up 7 times.
Is that okay? I swear, there is some way in which I am messing up this math problem.
Yeah, no, the marketers have wrong math.
Okay.
You can't get up 8 times from a 7th fall, so.
All right. Patricia's on the line. Patricia, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Jason Everett.
Yes. I have my theories to this, but to what do you attribute the reason for this huge increase in even particularly trans surgeries?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to it. If I were to say like, hey, we've got this big flooded river, where's all this water coming from? You know, well, there could be a dam broken upstream. There could be, you know, polar ice caps that are melting at the top of the mountains. There could be a torrential rainfall. There could be springs that have burst forth. You know, there could be so many influences. And I think that's what we've got going on, is a lot of cultural and philosophical and societal streams filling into one river that's now just reached its bank. So that means part of it being pornography, of hatred of the body, of, you know, women thinking like, wow, if that's what I'm supposed to be, you know, count me out. I'm non-binary. And people think, wait, you're just saying she's non-binary because of pornography? Well, the role that plays, for example, in sexual abuse of young men who see this stuff and then act it out with their 8-year-old cousin. And then where is she psychologically 4 or 5 years later? I know of girls who have been sexually abused who afterwards said, after that was done, I couldn't wait to get rid of my breasts because I need to almost disguise the evidence of my sexual maturity as a protective mechanism, because if I was a boy, that never would have happened to me, which is untrue because it happens to guys too. But they think, wow, my sexuality is the cause of my abuse. And a lot of times they don't put 2 and 2 together, but you start to psychologically dive in. There's some deep trauma. And a lot of times gender dysphoria is trauma trying to express itself in a particular way. But there are roots way back. I would say if we got to put the pin on anything, tail on the donkey, it's going to be contraception. Judith Butler, who's a, you know, world-renowned feminist gender theorist, said something in her book, Gender Trouble, and I wouldn't agree with 99% of the book, but she said sexual behavior has the capacity to destabilize gender. And what she meant by that is that if we can destabilize, in a sense, sexual behavior, whereby a man and a woman can get engaged in a sexual act that is not intrinsically ordered towards the procreation and the giving of human life, then why can't a man and a man engage in an act that isn't ordered towards sexual life? And if it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman or a man and a man, then does marriage really matter? And what does man mean? And it destabilizes our concept of gender. That's why we had gay marriage before this transgender revolution. There's a reason historically things happened. Contraception, sexual revolution, gay marriage, transgenderism. There's been a very logical progression from one to the next, but we need to be careful not to take a cookie cutter approach to this. because most of the people wrestling with gender theory are not trying to overthrow cultural gender norms. A lot of them are just trying to feel at home in their own body. And so we don't want to say, oh, you know, you're cross-dressing, you must have been sexually abused. It's a lot of more stuff going on. One of the most common templates that they found is something called rapid onset gender dysphoria. This term was popularized by a woman named Dr. Lisa Littman, used to work for Planned Parenthood. So she's not a conservative or Catholic, but she said there's a very clear trend of adolescent females suddenly identifying as trans without any pre-existing history of childhood gender dysphoria. Typically, they come from more progressive families, often go to public schools, spending an inordinate amount of time on social media. About 42% of them meet the criterion for an autism diagnosis as well. And then they have a friend who came out as trans. And before you know it, one is non-binary and one is this. And then this one's out. And she said, this has caused this massive inversion of the sex ratio of people who have gender dysphoria. Used to be middle-aged guys and young boys. In the last decade and a half, it's completely flipped. And she's saying this social contagion is being largely fueled by social media. Now, this doesn't fit everybody. There's plenty of people that had gender dysphoria before TikTok was ever invented. But it does explain why a lot of these girls who are not feeling at home in their own body are finding in these gender identity labels a word that kind of resonates with this lack of integration they feel in themselves. And they're like, yeah, that word, that's what I feel like. And oh, you did too? Let's have a club on campus. And so they're finding their identity, their community, and their mission all wrapped up in this thing. And so it's obviously quite complex. In my book, Male, Female, Other, we spend a whole chapter really diving into the roots of where did this come from? Is this from Bruce Jenner? Is that what started it all? Is it Leah Thomas? It goes way back before then. But the more we understand the roots of this thing, I think the more we can discover how to reroute culture in the right direction.
Does that make sense, Patricia?
Well, I think it's the education that's going on in the public school, as you did mention. Overall, yeah. I think it's a tremendous concerted effort to uneducate, indoctrinate our children. But then, more personally, what is our moral obligation then when family members just turn away from truth? What is my obligation to these family members who are really not wanting to hear truth?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, well, first, you're spot on in terms of the education. It's funny you mention that. I've got in my backpack right here a book I'm bringing to Australia. It's called Me Max, and it's they read this to kids throughout the state of Massachusetts. A little colored book for kids and cartoons. Here's a mom and a dad in the delivery room, a little baby. It says, when a baby's born, a grown-up says, it's a boy, it's a girl. If a brand new baby could talk, sometimes the baby might say, no, I'm not. When a baby grows up to be transgender, it means that the grown-up who said they were a boy or a girl made a mistake. This was read to 480,000 kids in the state of Massachusetts to prevent bullying. This is not promoting tolerance, it's just promoting transgenderism. So what you said is spot on. It's like a stranglehold, especially over the public schools. I mean, they've kind of just, honestly, the inmates are running the asylum. I was near one recently and the parents were telling me they got litter boxes in the school for the kids who identify as furries and a dark room for a boy who identifies as a vampire in the public school in Washington State. I mean, it's bonkers how much these kids are gonna resent the adults who weren't adults when they needed them to be. But how do you approach family members with this stuff? I would say a lot of patience, a lot of listening. You want to perplex them by how much you love them, but how much you hold the line as well. So kind of hold on to their hand with one hand, hold on to reality with the other hand, and don't let go of either hand. It's going to create some resentment. It's going to create some tension. But Christ promised this was going to happen. Don't think that I've come to bring peace, but rather the sword. And one's own enemies will be those of his own household. Obviously not encourage you to look at them as your enemies. Just help you to realize why they might look at you in that way. But hold fast to the truth. Research this thing. Because I think nothing turns them off more than when we start talking about it and they realize, you don't have any clue what you're talking about. That's not what I believe. That's not what I think. That's not what that word means. And it's a confusing and mystifying terrain because the word gender can mean so many different things. It's easy to talk past each other. So I would say, do your homework. If you go to the website, chastity.com/gender, check out some of the links we have there. We've got videos of detransitioners These are people who are screaming from the rooftops now, look, I did the transition. It didn't solve my problems. It created more. Maybe they might be more likely to listen to that person who's walked their journey and realized it wasn't the answer than listening to someone who's never wrestled with gender dysphoria. You could say, look, I'm willing to listen to your position. Could you share a video that you'd want me to watch to better understand that? And in exchange, would you watch maybe this interview with Chloe Cole and Jordan Peterson? And let me know what you think about that dialogue. And so maybe you could trade resources and expose them to the things they might not hear in this cacophony of the transgender ideology.
Patricia, thank you so much for the call and for the questions. We've got some lines open if you'd like to talk with Jason Everett. We're going to take a quick break. Perfect time to call. 888-318-7884. We can continue the conversation about the transgender issues, but if you have more general questions about chastity, you want to know about Catholic teaching, but you want to know the practical stuff as well, whatever it is, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have never seen women who want to be equal absolutely degrading themselves. And yet the media degrades your nature, your beauty as a woman, your goodness. Let us pray at some point our dear Lord touches their hearts.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, talking with Jason Everett, who's been doing wonderful work in the field of, helping us to integrate our sexuality so that we can be fully integrated people who are fully free to love one another and love God. He's been doing it for a long time. If you've got questions about chastity, if you've got questions about how to do it or why to do it, you are welcome to call, whether you're Catholic or not, 888-318-7884. We've also been talking a bit about the transgender issues, in part because Jason has done some recent writing on that, including male, female, other. Now, give me the subtitle on that, Jason, because I'm not going to remember it. Male, female, other.
A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender.
Yeah, that's what we need, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender. You should get it. You should check it out. You can check out all his work at chastity.com. I'm going to go to Anne now. I don't have a location, but I'm glad you're here. Anne, go ahead with your question for Jason.
Hi. My question is, when talking to people who support the transgender movement, and you bring up detransitioners, and they say, oh, well, regret is rare. Most people don't regret undergoing surgery or undergoing hormones. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that?
Okay. One, you could say, could you show me this study that you're referencing in terms of the low regret rates? Because a lot of times what's really important is you got to look at, okay, how many people are included in the study? How many of them were lost to follow-up after the study or during the study? And how long was the follow-up period? And so some of these studies, they'll be like, look, like 95% of these people say they don't regret having had that surgery. And then you look at the study, and it was like 9 to 12 months after the operation, and it was of a pool of 100 people, and 40 of them never responded to the survey. And the 40 who did, you know, maybe 38 of them said, hey, I don't regret it 9 months later. It's like, well, wait a minute. What about those other 60? Where were they? Or did they commit suicide? Why would they not want to say how well the follow-up went? You know, why were they missing? And why don't you mention that? So a lot of these people just read headlines. They don't actually read the studies. Because if you actually look, the more people included in the study, And the longer you follow them after the procedure, the more worrisome the results are. The largest study that was done was over in Sweden. They followed these people well over a decade after the surgery and found that about 8 to 10 years after the surgery, that's when it starts to kick in and their suicide rate climbs to 19 times higher than the general population. If you isolate out the female to male transitioners, you're looking at a suicide rate more than 40 times higher than the general population. And people say, that's because of you transphobic bigots. No, it's because 90% of people who commit suicide have a diagnosable mental health disorder that needs clinical intervention. And what's happening is the kids are going to these gender clinics, and the clinicians there are not set up to do long-term psychological assistance with these kids. They basically flatten all these layers of trauma, anxiety, depression, OCD, autism, sexual abuse, divorce, into one layer, trans, with one answer, transition. This is why over in Western Europe right now, it is a massive shift that's happening. Scandinavian countries, Norway, Finland, Sweden, they're doing a U-turn on this. You can't get puberty blockers from minors over there anymore. I mean, show up at a gender clinic in Amsterdam now with your 15-year-old that says they're non-binary. The clinic will say, okay, well, we'll get back to you in 18 months, and then we'll review the case for 9 months, and then decide if they're a suitable candidate for puberty blockers. And from the kid's perspective, it's like, what? I have to wait 2.5 years? By the time you guys make up your mind, my puberty is going to be finished. And from the doctor's perspective, it's like, exactly. Because they're realizing over there where they started this before we did in the States, now they're realizing there is not the research to show that this is actually helping the kids. When they go on puberty blockers, the kids are more likely to self-harm than before they were on puberty blockers. And so over in Western Europe, there's a seismic shift happening. I mean, the biggest gender clinic in the United Kingdom, the Tavistock Clinic, got shut down last spring. They fractured it into regional clinics that have a greater emphasis on psychology and mental health because they did an audit of 125 patients. They only did one audit ever. And what they found is 98% of the kids had coexisting comorbidities of mental health difficulties. But they said, we had no staffing here to handle that stuff. 35 of their psychologists quit because of this. And so over in Western Europe, the writing's on the wall. Over here, it's like we're just so isolated to think, oh, this is going to go great, but it's not. And so if you want to dig more into the numbers in terms of satisfaction, dissatisfaction rates in the studies, we've got a whole chapter on that in the book, Male, Female, Other, A Catholic Guide to Understanding Gender.
And I'm going to leave it there because I'm going to try to get as many on as I can with Jason before we have to go. Nick, I'm going to get you on, but you got to be quick with your question if you'd like an answer from Jason. Can you be quick, Nick?
Yes.
Okay. Quick.
Okay. So, hi, Jason. My question is basically, what do you do when you are... You know, I'm a teenager and I'm a high schooler. And, you know, like, what do you do when you have these kind of, like, uncontrollable, like, you feel like you're almost out of control? Because I feel like at this point, you know, there's just periods where it feels so habitual, so uncontrollable, I don't even know what to do anymore.
Nick, thank you.
In control in terms of the teenager struggling with a habitual struggle with pornography, something like that, or just discipline issues out of control? Could you just elaborate a little bit there?
Really pornography for me. I don't have access to it, thank the Lord, but just like other like lust related sins, like,
okay,
you know, masturbation and things like that.
Yeah. One thing I would try to do is find a good spiritual director that you can stick with. Don't go priest hopping, like, oh, Father so-and-so from Vietnam, like, he's in town, I'll go see him. Because you want to find a good spiritual director so they can really smell the trail of the sin, in a sense of like, okay, we tried this last time. That doesn't seem to be working. Let's try this, you know, for 3 weeks and come back. Tell me how that's working. And you'll make a lot more progress. It's like a NFL team that changes its head coach every other Sunday. I don't know how much progress you can make. I mean, you got to trust the system at some point. So find a good spiritual director, stick with that. And then a strategy that I've found to kind of be helpful is when a tempting thought comes, you know, where you see someone who you're tempted to lust after, try to make a little sign of the cross on your forehead. And then just the first part of the cross is up. So gratitude, thank you, God, for making her beautiful. And then down, but God, I'm sorry for the times I've lusted after. Please give me a clean heart. Then lift your heart up like the cross does, comes up above the heart, and then goes off to the side. Look at her hand. Does she have a wedding ring? pray for her husband. No wedding ring, pray for her future vocation. You're now at this point transforming temptation into intercession. You're responding to the beauty of the body with love instead of repression or lust. And so you're opening up that desire. And then lastly, leave her like the cross leaves one side goes the other. I'm like, okay, what is this infinite craving for ultimate love and beauty that I was made for, that her beauty is stirring up in me? It's the Blessed Trinity. And so you realize, God, you're ultimately the craving that I long for. And I need to not get stuck on the sign of your beauty that you've created here on earth. So those are a couple potential thoughts, but I think I hear the bumper music.
Yep, you do. And Nick, thank you. You were very quick, and I appreciate that very much. Thank you. Sorry for those who we were not able to get to. Jason Everett, check out his work at chastity.com. Go to Italy with him. Check that out at chastity.com as well. That's coming up in January. And come out and see him when he's down there for a couple days in Australia. Jason, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me on. My 13-year-old's taking care of the kids, and I hear near footsteps on my roof right now. So I'm going to go and take that. But